Can everyone hear me?
I can.
I can as well.
All right.
Great. Lee, would you just call the court to order and then I'll announce the case and the attorneys?
Sure. The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Connolly, Chief Judge Siegel, Judge Kirk, the Honorable Francis J. Connolly presiding.
Thank you. As all parties are aware, counsel, the first case is Offerman versus Sirik, A19-1539. Counsel for the appellant will have 15 minutes. Counsel for the respondent will have 15 minutes. And then finally, appellant's counsel will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. So whenever counsel for the appellant wishes to proceed, just begin and please start by telling us in a loud, clear voice your name.
May it please the court, my name is Adam Galili, attorney on behalf of the appellant Irina Sirik. Your honors, as usual, I'm sure the court has thoroughly analyzed the briefs that have been filed in this matter. And because I'm short on time and 15 minutes goes quickly, I'd like to skip the procedural history that's already outlined in the memorandum. Appellant mother is requesting that the appellate court reverse the decision of the district court, or alternatively remand it to the district court to determine whether primary residence has been modified. I think appellant's argument can be condensed into two main narratives. The first one is that the parenting consultant improperly modified the primary residence of the child. She didn't have the authorities from the parties to do so, nor did she have statutory authority to do so. The second part is that the district court's order, which incorporated the findings of fact and the parenting consultant's decision, improperly modified the primary residence of the child in violation of Minnesota Statute 518.18, subsection D. Although there are several levels to appellant's argument, I think there's a central question on appeal here, and that's whether a parenting consultant must be required to meet the statutory threshold for modification of a child's primary residence under 518.18, where the parenting consultant agreement is silent on that issue. And if the answer is no, the following question has to be answered. What should that standard be that the parenting consultant uses? Appellant contends affirmatively to the first question. And so the second question doesn't have to be answered. The largest contention, if we look at the district court order that appellant has, is the phrasing from the findings of fact on page 4 of the district court order, which states that the parenting consultant does not have any statutory directive or standard to apply other than generally considering the best interests of the child in making her decision. In making this finding of fact, the district court, interestingly enough, itself.
Counsel, I had one question.
Yes.
You know, first of all, well, actually, I guess one overall question. You know, if it was known that a parenting consultant was going to be the determining judge as to where the child was going to go to school, and at the time she was hired, both parties were 50 miles away, it seems to me that even if your client's home is the primary residence, I mean, wasn't there going to be, it seems to me if you wanted to insist that the school that the child attends was going to be, you know, near your client's home, that should have been put into the agreement. And in particular, you know, respondent points out that there was no parenting plan. So the fact that, you know, all parties knew that they lived 50 miles away and, you know, in different school districts, isn't it implied that, well, if that was known and she was going to attend one school or another, didn't you sort of acquiesce in the parenting consultant's decision to decide, well, which school is it going to be?
Your Honor, I think that's a great question. I think there's two ways to answer that. I think the first one is that the assignment of primary residence, the award of primary residence to appellant mother in the prior district court order put mother in a position where if you look at the scope of authority and it says the parenting consultant has the right to make a decision on school choice, it's a little bit vague, I think, is the first argument. Appellant mother's position is that the school choice could be an issue the parenting consultant makes within her school district. It was her understanding that by being awarded primary residence of the child would be attending school in her district, but for, you know, some sort of significant change in circumstances, endangerment that would allow the parenting consultant to modify that. And so,
what's that assumption based on? It seems to me that the attendance at school is only one factor, and it can be a strong factor, but it's not dispositive as to where the primary residence of the child is. And in this case, you had joint physical custody, and as I look at the outcome of the order, mother probably has more time with the child than father when we consider the time that the parent is actually with the father, not including work or school time in the course of a year. So, I mean, I just don't see the issue here, especially where the court made no determination that primary residence was changing, nor did the parenting consultant.
But Your Honor, I think you raise a great point. I think the one of the issues that appellant has with the district court's order is that it didn't look as to whether primary residence was modified. And I believe that that's a question that doesn't need to be remanded to the district court to make findings. I don't believe the district court even looked at that issue in detail or analyzed those. But again, it's appellant mother's position that because if we're going to say that, you know, the child did attend pre-K in mother's school district and mother was awarded primary residence, if we're going to argue that that award of primary residence essentially meant nothing to the parenting consultant, when the parenting consultant approached the issue, she gave no deference whatsoever to the fact that mother had already been awarded primary residence. There's several agreements that I think both parties have when it comes to the PC contract. Everyone agrees that the parenting consultant is a creature of contract. Its parenting consultant is prohibited from addressing matters not authorized by the parties. Both parties recognize that the language in the PC agreement is meant to outline and authorize the authority which the parties are granting the parenting consultant instead of a district court judge. And both parties here agree that the authority or the standard of review for the parenting consultant was not included and was not specified in the parenting consultant agreement. And so that leaves the Court of Appeals with two presentations that have been made, one by appellant and one by respondent. Appellant proposes that in the absence of any language by the parties granting the standard of review to authorize the modification of primary residence to a parenting consultant, the parenting consultant can't create his or her own standard. If one is to be imputed, it's appellant's position that the standard should be no less than that would apply to the district court, meaning that if mother did not give away her rights, so to say, in regards to the assignment of primary residence to her house, if she approached the district court instead of a parenting consultant, the district court would be forced to analyze father's request to have the child attend school in his district under 518.18D, which was not the standard that was applied to the parenting consultant decision. On the other hand, we have respondents' argument, which in their brief essentially says that the parties gave the parenting consultant the authority, but they didn't specify what standard the parenting consultant should use, and therefore no standard should apply. Now, the struggle with this standard is seen because in the district court and in the district court findings, father had argued that the standard should be reasonable and logical. And those were that was in the court's findings of fact. But the district court itself included its own standard, and the district court standard was that the parenting consultant's decision must be in the child's best interest. But that standard, right, we all know where the best interest standards come from under statute, but that standard doesn't apply for modification of primary residence. Appellant has five premises, I believe, that are supportive of our argument. And the first one is that prior to the parenting consultant decision, the designation of primary residence was awarded to mother. It had meaning and it had purpose. In order to make any decision under a parenting consultant has to have the authority to do so under the scope of authority, which is usually Section 5 of the parenting consultant agreement. The third is that the scope of authority that the parties appoint and give to the parenting consultant, in this case, is silent as to the authority of the parenting consultant to modify primary residence. The fourth is that the parties did not specify what standard of review or threshold the parenting consultant should use in determining whether modification of primary residence is appropriate. And finally, it's appellant's contention that by moving the child's school to another district 51 miles away, the PC did in fact modify primary residence. The schedule really has been flipped. Mother used to have the schedule during the week. Now father has the schedule during the school week and it flips in the summer. Appellant mother never relinquished her rights to the prior designation of primary residence. She never gave the parenting consultant the right to modify the child's primary residence, nor to apply any standard of review the parenting consultant chose to use.
Counsel, if I could just ask a quick question. So if we were to find either that the primary residence wasn't changed or, you know, we put that issue to the side for the moment, then does your client have an issue with the district court's analysis or application of this abuse of discretion standard? So what other legal arguments would your client have if we set the primary residence issue aside for the moment?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you. I think that's a great question. I think that there's a larger issue in this case, and that has to do with not having authority specified in the parenting consultant agreement. I don't think it just applies to the modification of primary residence. I think it could apply to every decision a parenting consultant makes. Now, in this case, when it comes to physical custody, legal custody, and primary residence, those three are singled out because statute generally requires a higher threshold for a post-modification. So if a party wants to modify the physical, legal, custody labels or primary residency, there's this higher threshold that has to be met. And the question is, it's almost a opening Pandora's box, that if the agreement, as this parenting consultant agreement is silent on all authority, it doesn't say in any way how the parenting consultant should analyze any issues. I think that is a issue that the district court ignored. And that's why we have an issue with the district court saying that the only standard a parenting consultant must apply is generally considering the best interests of the child. We don't read that anywhere in the party's agreement. And the only authority the parenting consultant has comes from this agreement. Your Honor, a second point to answer your question is the district court itself had said that this court may have reached a different conclusion regarding the determination of where the child should go to school and whether the primary residence was modified. And so the court itself admitted that it was simply reviewing the parenting consultant's decision and parenting consultant's eye.
In following up on Judge Siegel's excellent question, I mean, I'm looking at the parenting agreement, and on the last page at Respondents A42, it says parties agree that the court shall review the decision of the PC under an abuse of discretion standard, which is the most deferential. So, look, I've read her decision, and, you know, might not have been the one I made, because the only thing I understood it as well, because respondents' client has lived at the same house for 15 years versus 5 years where your client has been living, you know, somehow that tips the balance. I mean, I don't know. But, you know, he gave reason or she gave reasons. And even under that, it's an abuse of discretion standard. So again, apart from the whole primary residence issue, which Judge Siegel has excellently pointed out, I mean, speaking for myself, I would think you lose. You know, if we're, if, I mean, if it was in the same, if it was in the school district she liked, and this was, you know, private school versus, you know, whatever the elementary school she wanted, I mean, that would be a slam dunk, wouldn't it, for Ms. Novelli's client?
Your Honor, I understand the question. I don't necessarily, I think, agree with that premise, because the issue for the district court has to review, it has to compare what the parenting consultant did to some sort of standard. So how is the district court supposed to properly determine whether or not the parenting consultant properly applied the law or made a quote unquote rational decision? The district court created that standard itself. That's kind of our point, is that without any applicable standard for the PC, the district court can't compare for an abuse of a discretion. I don't think they can ever find abuse of discretion.
But don't we arguably have the same problem with primary residence, since that's not clearly defined in the statute? And the courts have been struggling to try to come up with a formula as to what constitutes de facto primary residence, I suppose you could say, where it's not specifically laid out.
Yes, Your Honor, I do agree with that.
All right, thank you, counsel. You will have time for rebuttal. We'll now hear from counsel for the respondent, please. And if you could first identify yourself. Ms. Novelli, can you not hear me?
I can hear you, and you're right, Judge Siegel, I was on mute. I apologize. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
May it please the court, Lee Novelli for the respondent, Mr. Offerman. There's, you know, in this case, it's a kind of an interesting case because we have something that's unusual. We've got a stipulated award of joint legal and joint physical custody. And we also have this agreement by the parties for an award of primary residence to a mother. Appellant argues over and over that 518.18 would apply if the district court had reviewed the decision instead of the parenting consultant. But it just doesn't. If you read 518.18, it says, if the court has jurisdiction to determine child custody matters, the court shall not modify a prior custody order or a parenting plan provision which specifies the primary residence unless, and then it goes on. There is no parenting plan in this case, and there is no basis to argue that, appellant doesn't even argue that there's a modification of custody. A discussion of 518.18 is not applicable under any circumstances in this case. I'll just note, you know, in preparing for the case, I was reviewing the Selesky case, and this court in a case that cited Selesky later and Ramsamy v. Ramsamy, it's A15-0503, the facts are not similar, but it noted, the Court of Appeals, and it's an unpublished case, that moreover, the parties here did not have a parenting plan with or without a provision specifying primary residence. So Minnesota Statute 518.18d would have applied only if the case involved a modification of custody, which this case did not. I mean, a plain reading of 518.18 does not require an endangerment standard to be applied in this case, regardless of how you look at the authority of the parenting consultant. An award of
Ms. Novelli, are you saying then that the primary residence is just a throwaway line in the district court's opinion, and it has no relevance whatsoever because there's joint custody absent a parenting plan?
I think under these are unique circumstances in even for family law cases. I think that primary residence gives a strong maybe persuasion for school choice. In this case, it does not. I agree with Judge Kirk's comments, kind of touched on this briefly. At the time the parties made the agreement on joint physical custody and the award of primary residence to mom, and stipulated to allow the PC to decide school attendance. They were living 51 miles apart. They could have chosen to include that primary residence means school choice. They did not. Those were not agreements the parties made. There is nothing in statute or case law that says that just because you have primary residence means the school attends or the child attends school in your school district. And in this case, in a war, I think it's very clear that the parties anticipated a dispute on whether the child would attend school in mom's school district or dad's school district, because they deferred the authority for that decision to the parenting consultant. They wouldn't have needed to do that, but for the assumption that there was still a decision to be made on school choice. So I think given these circumstances, it does not make sense that primary residence necessarily meant that the child would attend school in mom's school district. And because the parties live so far apart during the duration of the case, they knew they were going to have a decision to be made.
Counsel, you have to acknowledge that not having the child in mom's house during the school week and helping the child with schoolwork, with, you know, all the other things that go along with parenting a child in school. I mean, that is a dramatic change. So I'm sympathetic, you know, to appellant's argument that that really changes the quote unquote primary residence. Because once kids are school age, their primary life is centered around school and school activities.
I'm also sympathetic. The school choice cases and cases where the parents live far apart are difficult and challenging for the parent who ends up not being in the school district. But these parties also agreed to joint physical custody, which means that they stipulated that the routine daily care and control and the residence of the child was structured between the parties. I mean, they stipulated to that the residence was to be structured between the parties. So they acknowledged through their agreement on joint physical custody that the child's residence was already shared, and that dad's parenting time, at the time that the parties made that stipulation of primary residence, dad had 4 overnights out of 14. He had 36% parenting time. He increased over the next 2 years, he increased to 43% parenting time. And then the final increase to 50-50 was deferred to the parenting consultant by agreement. These parties knew that the structure of time for this child between the parents' homes was increasing as she got older. And it was anticipated. It's not surprising that the last increase to 50-50 parenting time was just before kindergarten started. That was intentional and discussed explicitly both in the district court order and in the neutral custody evaluator's written decision, that the parties were to look at increasing that final step before the child started.
So given this agreement, what might an abuse of discretion look like? I mean, how was the district court judge to decide that? I mean, what are the rails, if you will?
Well, I mean, if the findings didn't support the facts in the case, I mean, that would be an abuse of discretion. I also think that there's extensive case law on the fact that even in stipulated agreements where they don't mention a best interest standard, the welfare of the child is the district court's job to ensure. Hagen v. Shermer, Simmons v. Simmons, I cite the case law in my brief. It's extensive. And I disagree with appellant's counsel that the district court, in mentioning that the parenting consultant needed to abide by the best interest standard, was implying a best interest standard. I think what the district court was noting is that both the parent and consultant and the district court, whether the stipulated agreement states it or not, has to prioritize the welfare of the child. So I think in reviewing the abuse of, in the district court's review and in your review, you have to ensure the welfare of the child. The best interests of the child has to prevail regardless of whether the parents put that in the agreement or not. So I think that would be part of an abuse of discretion standard. And it has historically been, even with stipulated agreements. So I don't think that the district court was inserting a standard in this case. I think it was noting that the district court has that responsibility, as does the Court of Appeals, in looking at any decisions regarding children.
Ms. Novelli, what are we to make of the language at your addendum 34, where it says, under the scope of authority for the parenting consultant, it specifically says, she's to decide in number four, the consultant can decide parenting issues that were not contemplated by the parties when they addressed parenting issues in previous stipulations and are not addressed by an existing court order or prior decision of the parenting consultant. Now, since the prior court order specifically gives the mother primary residence, how could the parenting consultant change that?
I don't think the parenting consultant did change the primary residence. That's my point. Primary residence does not equate to school choice. And I mean, I don't see a modification of primary residence in this case. There's no facts that would support that. I think that if they had stipulated to sole physical custody to mom, I think this provision might trigger a different type of analysis, but they didn't. They agreed that the residence was to be structured between the parents. The school choice issue doesn't change that. It restructured some of the parenting time to do more parenting time with dad during the school year and more with mom during the summer, but it didn't actually modify, I would argue, primary residence of the child. She still has more time with the child. I would argue even more time than just an analysis of the number of overnights, because she's got summer time with the child and she gets to spend all day with the child, whereas dad's time is a lot of his court-ordered parenting time is taken up with school and work and other obligations during the school year. So I don't think that there's been a change in primary residence. And I think that is unique. I mean, I think there are some cases where this kind of structure would implicate a change in primary residence. I just think the unique facts of this case do not. And I think that award of joint physical custody speaks very differently to how these parents agree to structure the residence of their child. The appellant also argues that the PC didn't have authority to decide this case. You know, the parties could very easily have stipulated to all kinds of things regarding school choice. I mean, it would have been easy for them to include a standard that they wanted to use for the parenting consultant. They chose not to, and they're allowed to do that. And mom trying to insert an endangerment standard or insert any kind of standard is inappropriate. I mean, the parenting consultant did a very detailed analysis, but she wasn't required to do the same review or the same analysis that the district court was required to do. Although I think she did do a very detailed best interest analysis. This excessive and unregulated authority that appellant argues, they chose to give the parent and consultant authority to decide school choice and to not dictate to her what standard she used for making that decision. I think she did, I mean, this parent and consultant did home visits, independently researched schools, visited the communities, analyzed the child's connections with the people in those communities, analyzed the child's connection with the in relationships with the other children in the homes. I mean, she did a lot of work and analysis, but.
But counselor, so it wasn't her decision in the end that the father has the financial wherewithal to have owned this house and the mother doesn't at this moment? I mean, is that really, is it wealth? Is that what we should be looking at and saying, oh yeah, that's okay? That's the one factor and I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but that was the single factor that tipped the scale towards the father.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I don't think it was the father's wealth that really was implicated in this decision so much as his stability. I mean, he had stayed in that community for many years.
But I mean, following up on Judge Siegel's point, I mean, okay, good. I mean, I'm glad he's stable, but you know, because he lived there for 15 years, she's only been born for 5 years. And that was she said the determining factor is stability. It doesn't seem to be the child's stability, but dad's stability. So, I mean, is that, even under an abuse of discretion standard, is that enough to affirm the parenting consultant's district court's decision?
I think housing was a part of it, but I don't think that housing was entirely was all that the parent consultant was referring to with regard to stability. What she talked about in her decision was the fact that the child had been, her entire life had been in the same home with dad, that she had connections with other children in the neighborhood already established, that the other two children in dad's home, she had established relationships with. I think that was the stability that the parenting consultant was referring to, not so much dad's wealth or even the fact that she lived in the home for 5 years, but that she had developed a network and a community in that place, and that there's a benefit to her in maintaining that, going to the same school that the other children in her home were potentially going to attend. I see that my time is up, so I will stop.
Thank you. Counsel for the appellant, you'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. I just want to touch off where on Judge Francis and Judge Siegel's questions. The facts are actually, and these were raised at the district court in my memorandum of law, that these parties separated when this child was young. If you count the amount of overnights this child had slept up to the point of district court in each party's house, the child had slept more at appellant's residence than she had at respondent's residence. And so the facts actually established that when it comes to the child's stability, the child is more familiar with the mother's home than she was with father's home. The court has raised the issue of modification of primary residence, and opposing counsel has said she doesn't believe primary residence was modified. But I guess that's the point I have, is that the district court never addressed that issue. And therefore, that issue alone should be a remand to determine whether or not primary residence was modified. It's undisputed that the district court did not analyze that question. It simply said that it's questionable.
At one point in your brief, you said that primary residence had been bargained for. Where would we find that in the record to indicate that really was important to your client?
I think just the mere fact that it was included in there. I mean, I was her attorney at the district court level, and so I'm aware of the level of negotiations, the discussions with the parenting, with the custody evaluator, and so on and so forth. But I guess I can't specifically say she got that in exchange for this.
Wouldn't it be logical, given the circumstance at that time where the parties were looking at a graduated increase in his parenting time percentage, so to speak, to 50 or close to 50, that she, at least in the minds of the parties at that time, would be designated primary residence? I mean, it seems implicit almost.
Yes, Your Honor, I think it is implicit, but I think that my client's expectation was that while father's parenting time might expand, because there's such a difference in the homes, it was kind of known that if the child's going to go to school in dad's district, this 5-2-2-5 schedule is not going to work. We're not going to be able to have this midweek transition. And so my client believed that by securing primary residence, in order for that to be taken away from her, there had to be something more. And that's the issue. The word primary residence doesn't appear once in the parenting consultant's decision, not once. It's not mentioned in any of her preambles. It's not mentioned in her decision. It is as if it didn't exist. And it did exist. It was a court order and it had meaning. The parenting consultant could have addressed it and said, well, it looks like mother was awarded primary residence for pre-K, if that's what the parenting consultant believed, but she completely ignored it as if it didn't exist. Opposing counsel says that the parties agree to the structure and how they're going to structure their residence. I agree. Which is why father agreed that mother would have primary residence. He agreed that mother's home would be the school, would be the child's residence for purposes of school. If father didn't agree to that, why did he give that up? Why is that ordered for mother's residence? So I would flip that question back on opposing counsel. Your honors, again, appellant mother has experienced this wide range of proceedings from the temporary motion, custody evaluations. She spent tens of thousands of dollars at the district court level between evaluations, motions, affidavits, evidence. All that led to this order in 2017, which awarded the child's primary residence to her. If everyone knew this was going to be an issue, that means that this award, this label of primary residence, had meaning. It was the district court's attempt to set stability, that even though father's parenting time might expand, it needs to expand around the central tenet that the child will continue attending school in this district, but for some endangerment or some additional standard being met. In order to modify the primary residence, the burden would have been on father. I think that's unquestioned, right? The award was to mother, the burden is on father. Not once in the parenting consultant agreement did the word burden come up. It didn't come up that father had to prove it. All it said was that everything seems pretty even, but dad's had his house for a little longer, and so I'm going to award the child's district to him and ignore the 2017 order. And we disagree with that contention. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, counsel. The matter is submitted. You will receive our decision within 90 days. Stay safe.